Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. I am Alex Midas. He is Jacob Negro. Jacob, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Alex?
I'm good. You know, we're recording a day late here because I was busy over the weekend with work and then playing the Arena Direct, and then I wanted to get in some extra time to play Standard. For this episode, we're in a bit of a lull period, waiting for Edge of Eternities to come out. So we're just going to talk about what we've been playing over the last week. Jacob's mostly been playing Modern, since the next Pro Tour, it's not going to be for a while, but it is Modern, so he's kind of getting ahead of that. And I've been playing Standard, because it's been fun to brew after all the bans. Probably talk about the Arena Direct a skosh. I'm interested in a couple of things Jacob has to say about Sealed. I think we both played it.
Yeah,
mostly we'll be talking about that.
I had a decent weekend with Olivia playing together. We won, I think, 7 boxes, so pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So before we get into it, I want to remind everyone that you can support us over on patreon.com/stockuppodcast. Our tier at the moment is $1 a month. You get access to all our deck lists. This episode, we're going to have some brews I'm going to show you, and I'll probably not write a super detailed sideboard guide for them this time because the format's not super set in stone, but I'll write something, my ideas for certain matchups, what to do, the plans, that sort of thing. And then if you don't want to pay $1 a month, it's totally fine. You can watch us on YouTube, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's at Stock Up Podcast. So you and Olivia played separately for the Arena Direct?
No, we kind of just sit next to each other and play on the same account.
Oh, gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I always like doing them. I really like this sealed format, and with the new set coming, I'm a little sad to see this limited format go.
Yeah, I mean, the sealed format, definitely a lot worse than the draft format, but I really enjoyed the draft format. You know, I had a deck I drafted on Magic Online before the PT, and in between some of my Modern games, I played my matches out and 3-0'd with that too, and it's just a black-white deck, which I guess I'll add. At this point in the format, I think white-black is actually my favorite color combo.
For draft?
Yeah, for Final Fantasy draft.
That's interesting. I think I learned that black-white was one of the best combinations in Sealed.
Yep.
I like black, white, and blue as the best colors. It's funny, with those events, it's a little hard to figure out the Sealed format because there's so much variance in the games that...
Yeah, you know, the one thing I'll say is true that we even mentioned in our Sealed episode, and we mentioned in draft on our team for the PT, is black has a lot of bombs in this format. So I think maybe we were kind of wrong, or I was wrong, saying green might be the most played color in the Sealed format. I think it's black, just because you're most likely to open a broken rare.
Yeah. Is that why you don't like this format as much? It's kind of bomb-driven?
It's bomb-heavy, and weirdly, one of my biggest complaints is I have so many pools with a complete lack of playable 2-drops. I'll, like, grab every 2-drop I can, and it'll be, like, 2 or 3 that I think is playable. So many of my pools, they're just so 3-heavy.
Yeah. Have you been playing Monk's Fist?
Yeah, I usually always do, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I found out pretty early that was a good card. Probably because of that reason. It's important to have 2-drops so you don't get run over. I mean, again, with the directs, it's a little funny because it's best of 1, right? And it's smoothed.
So. Yeah, it's best of 1. It's smoothed. You play against a control deck, you don't want Monk's Fist sometimes. You play against an aggro deck, you absolutely need it. It's such a weird toss-up where you lose games with, like, a lot of variance in my mind, you know. Like, a deck that is twice as good as another deck could still easily lose to it in my mind.
Like, oh, yeah. I think the 2 best decks I had, I got, like, one of them I got 1 win with.
Yeah.
And the other one I got, like, 2 or 3. I don't remember.
Yeah, I shared with you a deck that I went 7-1 with it. There's another speed run of a pool because it happened right after I won another one. So when I posted in a channel, I saw they were 50 minutes apart, Olivia and I. And
that's real fast.
Maybe a sealed deck that might be the best sealed deck I've ever had. It kind of reminded me, actually, of the one I talked about in our sign-off in the sealed episode. Yeah.
This one seemed better.
Yeah,
this one, when I looked at first glance, I was like, oh, that's a good deck. And then, like, the longer I looked at it, the more I saw, like, hidden just rares just sitting around.
Yeah,
you had, like, 6 or 7 or something.
6 rares are mythics, and the worst of them is a tie between Planisphere and Vincent Valentine. Which is pretty egregious.
They're both pretty good cards.
Yeah, they're both rares you're very happy to have in Sealed. It was a blue-black deck, like, splashing Esper Origins, Kuja, and Atroxa. And I guess what's impressive is the mana was decent for those, but also, like, I'm not splashing anything else. Like, it's not like I'm stretching a lot here. It's a really solid blue-black deck with those cards.
Right. I had this awesome Winota deck I thought was my best deck.
Yeah.
And I had the other red-white human in the same pool that's like when ETBs give double strike and lifelink, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I had two of the wolves that tap the Torgal.
Nice. Okay.
And two Gobu Gardeners. And
that's
like
really
great,
cool.
Great mana Naya fixing. And like Rinoa and all these humans hit off it. I was like, this deck's insane. And I had removal. Yeah. And I got one in the fit because I got double mana screwed. I was like...
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was really disappointed. Honestly, I didn't even care if I won. I just want to play the games out more. But
like, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so what about Modern? That's what you've been playing besides the Direct.
Yeah,
right?
So I've just kind of taken an early start to playing some Modern Gold Leagues, really, only for now. And just, you know, there's a lot that doesn't really change about Modern, and I don't really expect Edge of Eternities or Spider-Man to have very many changes in Modern. You know, occasionally a card impacts Modern. Most recently, you know, Final Fantasy has some impacts, but Cori Steelcutter is probably, once again, the card seeing the most play in Modern, but I don't think that card will ever be banned in Modern, to be clear. It's a very fine card for the format. You know, it's a little annoying to deal with, but it's also, it doesn't really win on, like, turn three or anything. It's just
it seems about power level for that format. There's a long list of more egregious cards, but it is very good.
Yeah, and the decks are kind of built around it. One of the decks I played featured it. But anyways, a deck I started with, kind of interestingly, because it hasn't really been at the top of the format, I guess, is Ruby Storm. And really the reason I gravitated toward this deck is because I kind of thought, like, the decks to beat, in my mind, were also pretty fast, and this deck's pretty good at racing. And even though Raoul opens you up to some removal, pretty much, like, pretty good against removal, and you can sometimes even flip Raoul in response to removal in a turn, you play it all in the same turn. So I thought it was just going to be pretty well positioned. And, you know, it's not like it blew me away, but I would say it met my expectations, that I think it's still a pretty solid Modern deck. The other thing, I guess, is really appealing to me, you know, Ruby Storm is red-based, and you can splash one or two colors, and they could pretty much be any colors you want. But I'm a big fan of white, and the biggest reason is actually Flage in the sideboard. I think is a pretty solid juke, especially against Boros Energy. It's just a card that can kind of solo them some games if they're not prepared for it. Even in open deck lists, I think it's kind of hard for them to prepare for it. And you know, it's removal for things. And in addition to that, white has some of the best removal for weird things like Prismatic Ending and Get Lost and Wear Tear. So I really think that's the best color you can play with it. And then I guess the most notable thing playing this deck, I played just some pretty stock lists. Artist Talent blew me away with how good it was. And the list right now play two, and I kind of want to play four. And comically, a card I'm considering cutting for more copies of it is Ruby Medallion.
Wow, that sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah, so I guess to be clear, my stance on this deck also is that Raoul is like the best card in the deck. It's like a reducer that's also a payoff. You win so many games where, like, you're maybe running out of things to do on your turn, but you flip Raoul at the key moment. Maybe, you know, you do the trick where you've cast four instances of sorceries this turn, and then you cast a sorcery in an instant. It spells five and six, so you get two Raoul flips, and if either of them work, he'll flip into eight loyalty, because you can cast them with the trigger on the stack to kind of up the count for Raoul.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ult him, and when you ult him, you pretty much always win. Artist Talent, you know, it's not a reducer for two mana, but you can put three mana into it for it to be a reducer, and it kind of does something similar where the rummaging effect on it just kind of means you're never going to miss. And also, in a lot of spots, you can still win turn three with it. Like, you can play it on turn two, and then on turn three, you can just, like, cast one ritual and activate it and then start going off with another ritual. And like I said, it's really hard to miss. I'm not the biggest fan of Strike It Rich, but it definitely kind of incentivizes maybe playing that card because, A, that unlocks more turn three kills where, like, turn one Strike It Rich, turn two talent, turn three level talent, and you still have a mana. Or just discarding Strike It Rich to talent. Sounds kind of silly to say you play a card to discard it, but, like, the fact that you can flash it back potentially for one mana and get another rummage, but then it's replacing itself, so it's just zero mana, is pretty nice to keep going.
I had to look up this card because I didn't remember what the second and third levels did. So the second one is the two in a red, the one you want non-creature spells you cast cost one less. Kind of forgot about that mode. That's pretty
nice. But it and Raoul in combination are both just cards that I feel like are both cost reducers and going to kind of keep you from fizzling, which is pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. This is a card that I was impressed with in the Pioneer Phoenix deck. Yeah, it was better than I thought it'd be.
And actually, I played in the historical qualifier weekend, I played Lotus Field. And I had four of this card, and it was super impressive for me in there. So I was already kind of had high hopes for it in Ruby Storm, and it did not disappoint me.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a weird card because, you know, Rummage, you go down a card kind of when you play it. But in these combo decks, it's really not that weird to be able to level it. And especially in post-board games where both players get more interactive, it might be your best card in the sideboard games as Ruby Storm.
Makes sense.
Because you'll just have time to level it up. And it's kind of a thing people don't really have answers for as often for. You know, sometimes they're ready for... They're usually really ready to kill Rao. And then, you know, I guess Baseju and the like can hit Artist Talent too. But a card that often gets boarded in against you that Ruby Storm is weird... Or Ruby Medallion is weird against is people will board in Consigned Memory against you just to hit, like, Ruby and the Storm Trigger. Hitting the Storm Trigger is a little fake because you can just give it Flashback and go again so often. But... people do board them in very often against you. So hitting Ruby Medallion.
I mean, that might be a thing where you just board in a suboptimal card because it's better than your worst card.
Definitely.
What did you not like about this deck? Like, did it have bad matchups or?
I don't think any matchup is going to be like particularly awful. I think this deck, when it has a target on its head, can be really bad. I think the last Pro Tour really showcased that. A lot of really strong players picked it. And, you know, Nadu is obviously a much stronger deck, but I was even on the team, and, you know, I kind of also agreed that Ruby Storm was maybe just a slight favorite in the Nadu, which is why a lot of people picked it, though. Being a slight favorite against a really broken deck is kind of a risky call because you might just be wrong and your deck's not really broken like theirs.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the Eldrazi decks in that tournament were main decking Trinisphere. So a matchup that would potentially be one of your best matchups is just like main decking a card you can't beat in game one. So there was a lot of things wrong about it in that tournament. There's a lot of Orym's Chance right now in the format, which is pretty annoying. But the exception being that in the Boros deck, if you board into this kind of controlling Flage deck, which you're not boarding out of your combo, I would recommend, you know, like boarding out some of your exile top cards type things. When you board into this, basically. But anyways, and you know, maybe not all of your Pass in Flames you can go down and copy, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's a pretty good way to juke Orym's Chant, because if you're playing stuff like Pyroclasm, Brotherhood's End, Flage, Get Lost, and they're trying to pass with Orym's Chant because they're scared, they're going to just get buried really quickly.
So I'm guessing with this sideboard plan, you're also boarding in these other, like, kind of flexible removal spells that could hit things that people board in to block your combo, but also hit creatures and whatnot.
Definitely, yeah. It's really nice to find, like, the white sideboard cards do this the best, I guess, where, like, they hit sideboard cards that people bring in against you, but they also just hit random creatures, like Frog and just random Boros creatures, because that's pretty important to just have, like, this versatile game. And, you know, your deck has these cards like Reckless Impulse, Rend's Resolve, Glimpsed, so, like, you can kind of play a control deck and then do a combo finish. You don't have to play it in such a hurry. Also, I'll just add, the card Wish, I don't think is, like, a very strong card, and people go really all in on it. In my mind, Wish is for getting Grapeshot and Pass in Flames. It's not a Wish board, this deck. It's just, like, it's a win con. That's all it is. I only play two. In open deck list, there's a slight concern that only playing two means if your opponent had two Force Negations and two blue cards, they could just not counter any of your spells except Wish and beat you, so perhaps worth considering another way around that. It could mean that Grapeshot is certainly a way to do that. But, you know, I just don't think you have to do that, especially if you're just playing leagues.
Yeah. Is Force of Negation a hugely played card? I feel like I don't see it as much anymore.
Not always. Living End is a deck that's seeing coming up again in popularity that main deck's four, but they're just going to beat you on a different way anyways. It would mostly just have to be a control deck main decking a lot of Force Negation for that to come up, I imagine.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I guess I'll add, I tried a weirder version of this deck. I tried Blue-Red, but without any Ruby Medallions and four Artist Talents and even two Baralls. And the blue cards I played were Preordain, Vivi, Stock Up, and Flame of Anor. And actually, I tried Gifts Ungiven, and I hated it. And I didn't have four Stock Up when I played with Gifts Ungiven, and I played another league with four Stock Up, and Stock Up was way better.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
I hadn't thought Gifts Ungiven about that Garden Water in a long time, I'll tell you what. But I guess, you know, it's good with Pass and Flames.
Yeah, Stock Up and Flame of Anor were a little appealing to me because of artist talent. Getting like raw card quantity up in your hand kind of fuels the talent really effectively.
Right.
In addition to that, you know, Flame of Anor, even without a wizard, is just kind of a super braid variant. So it's a decent like sideboard card. I was only main decking one Flame of Anor, but sideboarding maybe as many as three when I tried it.
I'm assuming Rao is a wizard.
Rao, Baral, and Vivi are all wizards. Vivi is not really an enabler, but it's a card that functions kind of well and actually works as a win con. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Probably pretty threatening too.
Yeah.
Helps but tax oftentimes the removal spell on your guys.
Yeah, oftentimes in a very similar manner as Wish, it just only came up when I was going to, you know, as my win condition when I'm winning. But it's nice that I played a game versus High Noon where I fully leveled Artist Talent and had Vivi in play after, like, pyroclasing my Boros opponent, so they had a pretty non-threatening board. And the final level of Artist Talent says if you would deal non-combat damage, you deal an extra two. So the Vivi was just dealing, like, three damage per turn and became giant and just kind of beat my opponent that way. So that was pretty impressive.
Okay.
But I think ultimately I would recommend just pretty normal Ruby Storm, white sideboard cards. I'm not a big fan of Orym's Chant in the format in general, so I don't really play that card. But Flage, I'm a huge fan of.
That's the Silence type card, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's hard for Silence to be good in general.
Oh, but almost, it's very popular.
Every format. Yeah. It's so one of those cards. It's kind of like Surgical Extraction, where it's like way more popular than it is useful.
I agree.
It does
entirely.
Have its spots, but.
You lose a lot of. Like. Playing one of that card in your sideboard of random decks, that's way more respectful to me. But these decks I see so often, including Ruby Storm lists, have four. And it's like, how are you going to win games where you draw two of this card, you know? Like,
yeah, that sounds wild.
It's really a
especially
card.
If the game is at all kind of off the beaten path with.
Exactly.
Which oftentimes cyber games are because people are boarding in so much interaction.
I completely agree. Yeah, it's really a card that I think is meant to function its best as like a one of when almost everything else is kind of set up for you perfectly to have a combo turn or it's Boros Energy where you've kind of pressured and interacted the perfect amount and then on the last turn, you know, you kind of just use it as a time walk and it works because they're dead.
Yeah, so this is definitely one of the top tier decks then.
I think so.
Maybe not the
as
best.
I keep talking about Modern on this podcast for the foreseeable future, I imagine you're going to notice a trend with the way I talk about Modern, and that decks that can win fast I have so much more respect for than decks that can't. It's so important to me. Your matchups just can't be that bad when you can win on turn three. Ruby Storm can win on turn two. I did that in my leagues. It's not that uncommon to be able to at least threaten it with just, you know, a turn two ritual into a Rao, into more rituals, things like that. If you play Strike It Rich, it's even more common.
A lot of time throughout Modern's history, it's sort of just been about trying to find the best unfair deck for any given weekend that people aren't prepared for. Do you think it's still kind of like that?
To some extent, yeah. There's a weird thing with Modern right now where there's a lot of actually slower fair decks. I shouldn't say slower. I mean, Boros Energy will win on turn four a lot and maybe even turn three also. Maybe not turn three without Amped Raptor. But anyways, it's reasonably fast. The Prowess deck we mentioned, also pretty fast. That one is much more likely to win on turn three with the Double Strike, Delirium card, Violent Urge. But I think it's a lot more reasonable to think the right deck for the weekend is to interact with people. And a deck I don't play that I probably should get some more reps in with is Esper Midrange. That deck's looked really impressive to me. I guess to be clear, this is like the white black blink deck, splashing blue for Consign and Psychic Frog. I'm not sure how I feel about the Psychic Frogs. They look a little tough on the mana, but splashing blue for Consign seems totally fine. I imagine Eldrazi is one of your worst matchups, so that makes a ton of sense to me. But it's really good at playing its removal spells, and it has decent pressure and stuff like Philia plus Overlord or Flicker Wisp. It does a lot to interact with a lot of different decks, I'd say, pretty effectively. Mm-hmm.
So this is mostly, I'm looking at a list just on Goldfish. This is like the Ketramos deck.
Yeah, I've heard mixed opinions about Ketramos, but yeah, oftentimes have some Ketramoses and Relics. But yeah, I would say it's kind of just a blink deck. You know, it's got Ephemerates and Flicker Wisps, I think, and maybe it doesn't have as many Ephemerates as I give it credit for, but I imagine it has some.
Yeah, this list has some. Looks like a lot of people have Philia in high numbers. That's
I mean, they're trying to flicker the Overlord, right? That's like their kind of big pressure play that's kind of going to be good in every matchup. And they dig for things like Bogart Trawler and Witch's Enchanter sometimes too, so they can hit their land drops, but also those cards interact in really unique ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this deck looks pretty good. Is this sort of a new deck that's been popping up?
Yeah, I'd say it's weird. It popped up before Ketramos. I mean, I guess it took Overlord of the Balemurk to really, and a little bit of time for this deck to really pop up.
Sometimes it takes people time to build a deck, like whoever was working on it first or whatever group of people.
Yeah, but it's definitely...
I mean, Ketchumos looks like the most recently printed card, at least.
Yeah, it's definitely a really popular deck, and if in some world I played it at the next Pro Tour, like, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I usually am against decks like that, but, you know, I've played at a SCG Con, I played the Yorion, Solitude, Renin 6, Omnath deck that was pretty interactive, because those types of cards just do a great job of being so powerful that, like, you really don't need your interaction to line up perfectly. You just need to be able to interact in kind of ways that work at all, and your cards really overpower your opponent.
Yeah, this deck looks pretty good.
Yeah,
Solitude is a free spell. It's funny that it's just like pretty much white black.
Yep,
besides Frog, I guess.
Yeah, no, Consign's the real draw to blue mana, in my opinion.
Oh, gotcha. Man, that's funny. Shouldn't they ban that card? Holy.
Yeah, it's, I think, the most played card in Modern.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was on accident. Seems like the kind of thing that they wouldn't have done on purpose.
I mean, they printed it in a set where they printed also a land that taps for two color or two mana on turn one, Ugin's Labyrinth. So I think they really just wanted to make sure they could contain the Eldrazi decks, which the Eldrazi decks still are very good, given Consign is the most played card in Modern. So,
But did they need to make it so flexible that it's good against so many other things?
Yeah, hitting like Cascade out of Living End and things like that is definitely pretty interesting. Or hitting your own Flage Sack trigger is also kind of interesting.
Okay, what else do you play?
Yeah, so the next deck I moved to is a deck that's kind of off the wake of the Breach ban and in combination with Steelcutter getting printed, and that's Blue-Red Artifacts, which... I mean, you could call it different things. I like calling it that because that's kind of the base of the deck. This is a Mox Opal deck that's using the package of Opal Bauble, Amber, Tamiyo, Emery, as I'd say the core, and Saga. It's kind of this core package that you could put in a lot of decks. And the home that seems to be seeing the most play is this blue-red deck, usually just splashing green for Haywire Might. And it just is kind of a fair deck that has a lot of pretty individually powerful cards and is trying to mitigate kind of the legendary... The fact they have so many of the same legends in different ways. Steelcutter plays pretty well with zero drops, obviously. It's also like a nice artifact, both to turn on Opal, but also like Emery. The Steelcutter doesn't go to your graveyard that much if like from the battlefield, but Emery milling it is a nice bonus. I mentioned this deck before when we were talking about our top 10 in VB. Looking like a good candidate, and I'll walk back on that now. Even though VB, I know, sees some play. Manguchi had a list with two. I am not a fan of it at all in this deck.
Okay. It looks like it could be okay. I mean, VV, when I heard about people thinking about VV in Modern, it seemed a little slow for me.
Not about how slow it is. It's that this deck has a lot of mana already, and VV's kind of a mana card. And, you know, gotcha. These last slots in the deck, I much prefer to be two for one. Stuff like Flame of Anor, Expressive Duration, and a card I tried that I am moderately impressed with, and I sent you a list, is Urza, which is not a wizard, unfortunately. But Urza, it kind of reminds me of, like, when the old Jun list played Huntmaster of the Fells or whatever. You know, it's just, like, it's a two for one. If it sticks around in play, it's going to generate some value. You know, it's not a terrible card. It's not a super broken card anymore, so I don't think you should play four. But I definitely don't think it deserves to be completely excluded from this deck.
Man, this card Urza used to be really broken in Modern. It's crazy that...
Yeah,
you're having to fight to get one in your Mox Opal deck.
But. Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be fair, Saga is maybe the card that competes with that. Saga is this kind of mana sink, and it's also a land that goes away. So weirdly, it has a lot of conflicting deck building costs with Urza, I think.
Gotcha.
But yeah, this deck, you know, it's kind of it can turn the corner pretty fast with Cutter. You know, when you have a turn two Cutter plus a zero drop, it's not that uncommon to win on turn four, to be honest. You know, you'll have three Monks and they can be huge. But, you know, it definitely plays a lot of long games. You're trying to interact with Galvanic Blast, or you can play Lightning Bolt or Unholy Heat and Metallic Rebuke, Force Negation, Flame of Anor. The random little Saga trinkets, Haywire Might, Aether Spellbomb, Soul Guide Lantern, and Sideboard Pithy Needle, those can all help kind of stall out a game. It's a pretty, just like, it's like a mid-range deck. It's very Jun-like, to be honest.
It's interesting for a Mox Opal
sort
of thing. Is this the only deck at the moment that's playing Mox Opal, really? I don't see, I'm looking at the top decks on Goldfish. I don't see much Mox Opal.
I would say this, like I said, there's kind of this blue wizard core that a lot of decks use, including a more traditional Affinity deck with Thought Monitor, I think.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, this deck, you could splash another color, but it's a little awkward with Saga. And a big reason to not splash another color is Harbinger of the Seas, which I tried main decking and I wasn't that impressed with. It's just a little too weak against a lot of the format, but I was really impressed with it as a sideboard card. And, you know, you can play it on turn two with Mox Opal, but also I think, and I was even going lower or completely cutting my cutters when I did this, you could board in a lot of interaction, including four copies of Consign versus these Eldrazi decks. And I think even Broodscale, to be clear, especially because they're going to try to Emrakul you. And you play kind of this Blue Moon deck, if you're kind of familiar with that, where, you know, it's just kind of a Blood Moon control deck with a lot of value, and you end up playing a much longer game, and you don't need to have the Blood Moon in your opening hand or whatever. Like, sticking it eventually to kind of turn off things like Cavern of Souls or the real big mana plays is kind of good enough.
Gotcha. And Blood Moon here is the Harbinger of Seas, you said. That's the 2/2 creature that makes
it. Prism of the Islands. Yeah, it's just a clear choice here because... you have all these, when you're doing this game plan, you're boarding in a lot of blue counter spells. So even turning off your own red or being very limited on red is kind of okay. And it's a wizard. And also, you know, unlike Magus of the Moon, it doesn't just get like bolted or anything. Like, it really only dies to dismember out of a lot of these decks prepared for it.
Yeah, that's a pretty big benefit to it.
Yeah.
Just in general, Blood Moon effect has been pretty good with Mox Opal.
Definitely. They're good friends. And now the Saga rules change means that you're not really hosing yourself. So that's a nice
interaction. Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Sometimes you can set up just sticking one on chapter two of your Saga, and then your Saga won't turn into a one drop, but you'll be able to pump out constructs the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, this deck seems good, too. Maybe because I don't play much Modern. I just see how powerful the decks are, and I'm just kind of...
Yeah, no, it's pretty...
Blown away.
It's been pretty nice. And yeah, I guess like that kind of a flex spot that I was impressed with is Expressive Iteration, kind of what I was talking about, where Vivi is like a mana engine, but I just really want more value cards in this deck to use my mana on. And Expressive Iteration and Flame of Anor are kind of perfect for that.
Yeah, that all makes sense.
So yeah, that deck, definitely super impressive to me for a mid-rangey deck. Like I said, I know it's a little weird to say it's like Jund, but that's kind of how I think it is. It's just... interacting. Instead of discard spells, you have some counter spells. It's very similar in my mind. Cameo and Emery are kind of both Dark Confidants in a sense.
Right. Boy, it's hard to see that by looking at it, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just a mid-range deck with pretty high card quality. Obviously, the legendary Moxen are kind of weird, but you know, those are like lands in a sense. Like, they're it's not that weird.
And then you can kill fast with Steelcutter.
Exactly, yes.
It sounds like this deck is more... is this more... Like, you have a less defined list, you would say, for this one?
Yeah. I started with Manguchi's list, but yeah, I would say... You know, another option with this deck, just to add when I was talking about another color, is you could, like, somehow splash white and include Flage. I wouldn't play four, but, like, Emery milling something... I was kind of wishing I had more things to do for my graveyard in games where I was just playing Emery and they were dying over and over. You know? I personally think Harbinger is going to cover more of your worst matchups, specifically the Eldrazi decks, but so I don't really want to do that, but yeah.
Okay.
There's definitely a lot of directions, even within still calling it a mid-range deck. There's also combo decks that, you know, can play these packages too. I've seen Canister playing like Song of Creation, the 4-mana enchantment, teamer enchantment.
Interesting.
With that same package, because you want all the zero drops anyways.
Yeah. Combo as in, like, it just does something. It's not an infinite combo, is it? I can't think of it.
You like draw your whole deck and cast Grapeshot or Thassa's Oracle or something. So in a sense, it is.
Wow. Okay.
You go up mana with the Moxen. Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's trying to really copy. You know, this package was in the Breach deck that was completely broken and had Breach get banned. So, you know, it's has a precedent for that for sure. Of Emery, Tamiya are these nice grindy value cards that allow you to play kind of a long game, but also, you know, they enable Mox Opal, Mox Amber, and you can combo really quickly because Moxen are broken.
I guess I need to look up what Song of Creation does. Oh, I see. So, 4-mana enchantment, teamer enchantment. Whenever you cast a spell, draw 2 cards.
You
play an additional land.
So, you, like, you play it, and during that turn, you get to go up a mana, and you're just trying to win the game the turn you play it by drawing your whole deck.
Yeah, so with 0-mana spells.
They'll play, oftentimes, what is it, an Offer You Can't Refuse, which is the 1-mana negate that gives 2 treasures, which both can be kind of a protection spell, but they'll counter their own 0 drops and go up mana that way.
Gotcha.
But yeah, okay, next deck, kind of another curveball for me, was Domain Zoo, and that's mostly because I saw a Frowning Table, a Magic Online player who I teamed with for the last Pro Tour, Top 8 did the mock showcase with it.
Did he have the chicken?
Yeah, he was featuring four copies of Saz's Chocobo.
Nice.
And also, perhaps, maybe I'm a little behind on the times, but it seemed like a little bit of an innovation for this deck was to go, they usually have two flages or something, but he went up to four flages and increased his land count by, I'd say, about two or three more than I usually see in this type of deck.
Wow.
Which, you know, is probably a huge nod to Boros Energy, and that probably was a deck he played against a lot in the tournament and probably paid him off. You know, and also increasing your land count is great for the Chocobo. It definitely was a bit more of a mid-range deck, which makes some sense. You know, your interactive spells in this deck are Bolt, Binding, and Stubborn Denial, which are pretty good again in a wide variety of matchups, so that's nice.
I really should have mentioned it already, but for people who are audio only at the moment, there are going to be pictures of these decks up on the YouTube video, and then of course it's going to be on, they're all going to be on the Patreon as well, but if you wanted to see it visually, probably honestly people who listen to this podcast kind of already know these decks, so it should be fine.
Yeah. So then, yeah, the domain deck, it was actually pretty unimpressive to me, to be honest.
Darn.
So I've never played this deck yet, and the Leyline Scion thing is a thing I've played a lot of decks that don't really care about it, like Ruby Storm and Living End. In fact, when I requalified for the Pro Tour for the first time, I played Living End, and this was the release weekend of Leyline, and so Zoo or Rhinos with this package was a huge breakout for the tournament, and I played against Leyline, Scion, Rhinos once and Domain Zoo four times, and I kind of smushed all of them with Living End. So it's definitely like a package that I've already kind of recognized is not that powerful, but I understood, you know, oh well, if you can't beat it, then it's really annoying. And then I played against the Esper or white black blink deck with this deck, and they just have like Witch Enchanter or Flicker Wisp on your Leyline plus Solitude your Scion, or Philia on your Leyline plus Solitude your Scion. Like, they're just not cold to it at all. And that matchup actually just seems like a huge nightmare for this deck. Like, I don't even know how to approach it.
Looking at this deck, my inclination was maybe this is like an anti-fair deck because it's a little more resilient.
Yeah, but that
presents like some stubborn, pretty annoying threats just on that are, you know, just threats on their own.
Yeah.
But if that matchup's bad, then all right. Yeah.
Exactly. That's like, what are we doing if that matchup's bad? That's how I felt. I played against that deck twice when I played this, and I just didn't understand what I was supposed to be doing. Because
you're not really killing anyone super fast.
Yeah, and they have like, not only can they exile Flage if you even escaped it, but they also just have Relics. Like,
right.
And Bogard Trawler.
Yeah,
it seems
it's not good against the fair deck. I mean, that is kind of a new deck. I don't know what the fair decks people were playing before.
Yeah, I know I had a really good win rate at that showcase that Broodscale won. And I guess to get into the last deck I played was Broodscale, which I played a list pretty similar to what won that Spotlight series. And also, Ross Miriam has been streaming this deck. And the list I played, I 5-0'd a Gold League with. So you can find it. My Magic Online's name is Ramp. And I only changed one card from Ross Miriam's list. I cut a sideboard Pyroclasm for a Stone of Eric. And yeah, you know, I brought this deck up before as my favorite deck in the format, and that's still true. And I just think it's an amazing deck. The Blade plus Broodscale combo can threaten to win as early as turn three, so I really love that. And it's also a pretty decent Emrakul deck. I know you could probably map out a way you could even turn three Emrakul, but the Emrakul is like a turn 5 to 7 play in this deck, I'd say. But, you know, for a deck that can like win on turn three and your opponent has to have kind of cards to stop you, a turn 5 to 7 Emrakul is kind of like the opposite of like, it's almost like a complete juke, you know, like it's just.
Right. It puts them in the bind. So if they're trying to play. Cards. Yeah. If they're trying to play an attrition game where they're waiting out your combo and trying to pick apart your combo, that's going to slow the game down.
Yeah, you just end up casting a Kozlix command on their end step, getting like some spawns and going to your turn and sacking them and casting Emrakul. And
this deck looks really nice. It also looks pretty fun. I like green creature decks.
Yeah, you have Saga, Stirrings, Rumble, so you have a lot of redundancy. The games are more interactive than they might look because of that, because, you know, you have even the main deck, one Haywiremite, one Soulguide Lantern, one Vexing Bauble. That doesn't sound like a lot, but you have a lot of all your digging cards find these cards. So, you know, between Saga, Stirrings, and Rumble, you often find these cards in matchups you need them. On top of that, in the sideboard, you have even more cards in that category. And yeah, the Red Splash is for Writhing Chrysalis, Unholy Heat in the sideboard, and Fire Spout in the sideboard right now. The red sideboard cards, I was pretty low on. And in fact, if Alex posted the deck list I sent, it's probably not going to really have those. Writhing Chrysalis, pretty impressive to me. You know, it's kind of funny. It was a completely broken draft common in that format, so it's funny to have it see play in Modern.
I mean, it was a higher-powered draft format, right?
It's but, you know, Masters. It's an Eldrazi, and so that's obviously nice. You can play it off Temple. You can find it off all your things, and it has Reach, and it's just a lot of bodies. It actually, you know, this deck, the kind of bad card this deck plays is Blade of the Blood Chief. Otherwise, it's kind of a mid-range deck with mostly solid cards. You know, Brood Scale's not amazing either, but it's solid at least. But that card's kind of good with Blade of the Blood Chief. You play it, and you can equip it. And then, you know, when you sack your spawns, it's getting 2+1+1 counters. And when their creatures die, it gets more. Blade counts your opponent's creatures too, notably. So it's also kind of a combo with Ballista. And yeah, it's just, you know, I had a game versus Eldrazi Ramp where the Chrysalis, I got it to a 13-14 and my opponent couldn't attack me. And I eventually won by burning them out with Flesh Raker.
Nice. What are the matchups like for this deck? What do you don't want to see?
I would say like the faster decks are probably scarier. You know, Amulet sounded pretty scary to me. This kind of a side note. So I did beat Amulet actually in the league I 5-0'd, both post-board games. And, you know, that deck is weirdly like a graveyardy deck with Scapeshift. And their Scapeshift lines involve getting Teleria West for Summoner's Pact. And like my opponent lost to me having things like Soulguide Lantern and Vexing Bauble. And I thought, man, if my opponent was just playing Amulet from like 2023, I would have lost horribly.
That's funny. Huh. Okay.
So like if maybe like Dryad to be Leading Grove into Valakut, I would have been into Primeval Titan for like a Valakut and eventually attacking Suva, I would have been totally dead.
Right. It's like Storm a problem maybe?
That was an example of another deck too, I think, that could be problematic. Boros Energy maybe kind of annoying. The Prowess deck might be scarier, just kind of faster and in the air. They're kind of just asking you to play removal, if anything, to beat them. And they have some bit better interaction against you than you do against them with just Lightning Bolt, and that's mostly it. But
I mean,
the Chrysalis has to be amazing against them, though, you know?
Yeah. I guess Boros is a good benchmark if your deck's good against that. It's the most popular deck.
Yeah.
I think it'd be okay against it, but I guess...
I think okay against it is where I feel like it is. I don't think you're like a heavy favorite or anything. I saw Ross Merriam boarding out his Flesh Rakers in the matchup, and I did that too, and it made sense. They're just a little too vulnerable to their removal.
Gotcha.
If you haven't played with the card, Causeless Command is really messed up.
I have read it, so that's about all I've got. I'm sure other people will play with it. I'm just out of the loop in Modern.
You know, it scales at any point in the game, being an X spell. It just interacts in a way that you pretty much always need it to with the modes, and it ramps you. You know, it always has a buyout of like make spawns and scry X and draw, which in decks like these is way better than it sounds. You know, you're just gonna end up with a bunch of mana and drawing perfectly, and sometimes, you know, it's like for five and you scry like three spells to the top and make five spawns, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, commands have been historically very good just because they're so flexible, and I would think, I mean, this card reads good. It was in a set that was made for Modern, so it's powered up.
Yep.
It makes sense that it's a really
good card. It's kind of a fireball with Flesh Raker or Chrysalis or Blade even. You just make a bunch of spawns and you can sack them. It has a really weird play pattern. This comes up more in the Eldrazi deck, but like you can tap all your mana and do the make spawns and make spawns plus Scryx play. If you're really late game and you top deck this card, for example, and if you don't already have a Causeless Command in your graveyard, which means in this deck it's the only kindred and only instant spell in the main deck, it means it's going to add two types to your graveyard for Emrakul and produce the same amount of mana with the exception of two of them. So essentially, you can use it to like dig aggressively for Emrakul and it doesn't cost you anything.
Okay.
Like if you had 9 mana and 2 card types in your graveyard, four card types in your graveyard, but not a Causeless Command, then like you'll end up with 7 mana and 6 card types in your graveyard after it resolves.
Right. Nice. So in the games that you want Emrakul, it's probably pretty easy to find.
Yeah, I'd say 2 has felt like a good number to be able to find it. And when I was skeptical of main decking both when I started this, but like I said, the deck itself actually was making the game go longer by itself than I thought with that kind of saga package plus the Stirring's Rumble to find them.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Do you ever need two?
Sometimes, especially versus that Solitude Blink deck, they might Solitude it when you first cast it, and then that kind of that combined with you taking their turn can still be pretty devastating for them, but then the game's kind of at a lull. And then the second one will just kind of always end it.
Right. Pretty nice. So I just, on happenstance, noticed that my LGS that I normally play at had a modern RCQ over the weekend.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even realize they did RCQs. But, and you know, I would have had to know quite a bit ahead of time, but if I were to build a mono deck, this is definitely what I would build. It's definitely my
biggest recommendation. And like I said, I just think it's playing a really strong long game and short game. So
I've seen other people's lists with this deck, and they've had a lot of Sephiroth in them.
Yeah. So
did you try that at all?
I have not tried it yet. I'll have to. I can see it working. I would probably play. I saw Young Dingo, former teammate of mine, won some RCQs with it, and he had four Halfling, and that made a lot of sense to me. It seems like with Sephiroth, you know, it's a black source for Sephiroth, and going like Halfling into Sephiroth and just sacking the Halfling, especially in a deck like this that might have Eldrazi Temple and stuff, that seems totally fine.
You certainly got a lot of fodder for it.
Yeah.
And then it plays kind of nicely with Flesh, like the Fleshlicker plan, although maybe that's the slot that it takes.
It's in the Chrysalis slot, kind of.
Okay.
The sideboard cards, as much as Thoughtseize sounds nice to cast, Fatal Push is kind of non-interesting to me, to be honest. Dismember is the most interesting to me anyways, because it kills Harbinger and you can sack a spawn to cast it. But the sideboard colored spells in kind of any build of this are much harder to cast because of stuff like Cavern of Souls or Delighted Halfling, like I said. And also, in kind of the same way you splash cards in Limited, increasing the quantity of the cards you're splashing in these types of deck is not free. And you're always going to play four Temples and four Sagas. So you already have eight colorless lands in this deck.
Yeah. This deck's already kind of playing an additional secret color with the colorless cards.
Yeah. You need more than, you know, just Temple and Saga to turn on your Kozilek's Commands and Flesh Rakers.
So it's not just like mono green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing about the red splash that makes it a little bit more appealing is Grove of the Burn Willows is like the best land ever for this deck. Even if you played mono green, you'll play Grove in this deck.
Mm-hmm.
Each opponent gains one life is just such a low cost compared to anything like a pain land that does damage to you.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. When they made that card, I'm sure they put it in red green because they figured that was one of the more aggressive colors, but like, it would be totally broken if, you know, other colors had access to that land.
This is still really good. Funny tangent, but when I build my cubes, I love trying to include Grove of the Burn Willows, but a big concern of mine, and I've included Punishing Fire in them before, but a big concern of mine when I include Grove is that people expect there to be a Punishing Fire in the cube, and I just think it's a broken land that, like, is better than Copperline Gorge, even.
Just,
you know,
a really good dual land, yeah.
It's like,
oh, I didn't get Punishing Fire, and they get disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does feel like maybe if you're building a cube specifically, you should put Punishing Fire.
Yeah, when I build cubes, I try to make it so that when you see things and you expect them, those things are actually there.
Yeah, that's probably the worst thing about playing other people's cubes is when they do weird things and you're just like, what? How am I supposed to know?
But, yeah, exactly. But anyways, Grove's just a really strong card, and that's part of why the red splash is the most appealing of all the colors you could splash to me in this deck. On top of that, the card you're splashing being an Eldrazi, just all around synergistic. It ramps in Emrakul too some games.
Okay. Nice deck. Right on. Is that the last one you played pretty much?
Yeah, that's the most recent one I played. And really, I mean, if you look up Ross Miriam, he probably has some guides on it too. It's hard for me to not recommend them because they seems like he knows what he's doing. And I liked his list. I liked the four Chrysalis and two Ballista and two Halfling. You know, Halfling is a pretty nice card in this deck. Playing four, and, you know, when it's Sephiroth, it's different. But, you know, it's like you just kind of want to fill in some more one-drop slots and maybe have a little bit of acceleration, but you also don't want to draw a bunch of Halflings.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if he's tried Sephiroth?
He did, and I saw him play it one day. I didn't see his games. Maybe I tuned in a little bit. But I saw him tweet later in the day that he would absolutely not recommend it and he would stick with red-green after playing it for one day.
Bummer. Yeah,
it sounds like an annoying card in Mirrors because if you sack spawns, they drain you, and you're pretty
low. Sounds like a good card, but I don't know.
Yeah, I say you're low on removal and I feel that way, and then you're just like Kozilek's Command your thing and make three spawns or draw a card or dismember it or cast Emrakul and attack myself with it, you know, mm-hmm. and you end up answering these things way more often than I believe. And also, you know, it's like you play a Chrysalis and they can never attack with Sephiroth the whole game. Things like that.
Yeah. Is it possible he was playing a lot of other black cards too and that was skewing his perception? Like maybe that's a bad idea, but just Sephiroth?
Yeah, too? He did try it with Unearth.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't sound great.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense to kind of try to unearth your Broodscale, Fleshraker, or Sephiroth, but yeah, it was a little weird to me just for the same reasons I was saying. I think you just really have to count Halfling as a black source. If you can find another legendary spell to that costs black mana that would make sense in your sideboard, then sure, splash that too. But yeah, I would probably minimize the actual black spell count. Thoughtseize may be an exception because it's pretty good against Consign and stuff like that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I guess Consign's probably one of the biggest things you have to think about after sideboard against almost every deck. That's kind of
You crazy. Have to think about it, but I've played a lot of these Eldrazi decks and the Eldrazi ramp deck, and, like, I'm not saying Consign's bad against this deck. It's the best card, but, like, your decks are really good, and you just keep casting your spells, and they're all Haymakers and Writhing Chrysalis. If they want to cleanly Consign it, they need to pass with two mana up. You can pass with Kozilek's Command and cast it in their upkeep and get them to use it and things like that, you know? You beat it all.
And I guess at the end of the day, it's just a one-for-one pretty much.
Exactly. It's just a counterspell at the end of the day that can cleanly really answer your things that aren't supposed to be cleanly answered. This deck also has a Cavern of Souls, so sometimes it doesn't even work, right? You just cast Emrakul with Cavern. They can sign the trigger. You have a 13-13.
Nice.
Like,
yeah. Okay, well, it seems like your modern exploits are going well. You're going to be playing Standard in the near future, I'm guessing, with the rotation coming up.
Yeah, I really want to shift gears to Standard. We have the qualifier weekends this month, so I'm really interested in that. And in addition to that, I plan on going to Phoenix for the Laughing Dragon MXP in August, which will be after rotation. So yeah, I want to shift gears to Standard for a bit. Also, you know, help our listeners for their RCQs in addition to the qualifier weekends. But I believe with rotation, a new RCQs and season starts. That'll be Standard.
Yeah, totally. People also have all their, like, there's these kind of, like, Standard Showdown type events going on. And obviously those are, like, kind of low-level events, but they're actually, like, presumably your local LGS will have them, and they're handing out these promo cards. Like, I went to one, I think last week, last Tuesday. And, you know, because Standard is so dead, I hear it's pretty common what I've experienced in my LGS, where when they run the Standard Showdowns, it's only like 8 people. And like everyone makes top 8 and everybody gets a promo. And we were getting
one, it was 4 people, and I won like the. It was only Virtue of Persistence and Preacher of the Schism type stuff. Not nearly as cool as the promos I've been seeing that are Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Well, now there's like Final Fantasy promos and the Squall. If you get the Squall, it's like $100.
Yeah. The Ultima Brass was like extremely expensive.
Yeah, that's for a store championship, which is slightly different, and you have to win.
Yep.
But if you do win, you get a City Brass, it's like $400. So, I mean,
I saw that.
That's pretty relevant for people. It's relevant for me. I like going to those events. You said this weekend there's a best of one.
Yeah, so this weekend is the best of one play-in for the qualifier weekend. And then Friday, not this Friday, but next Friday, is the best of three. And then that weekend after that Friday is actually qualifier weekend, and that's gonna be Standard, so kind of an interesting post-ban pre-rotation Standard.
I'm gonna talk about some of the Standard decks I've been playing, and I'll have pictures on the YouTube channel for them. All of these decks are definitely not best of one, they're definitely best of three decks. I like building kind of slower decks, and they all require best of three. Best of one, what's your hunch that might be good if people like best of one?
Yeah, so I just have a slight feeling that Omniscience is still probably going to be decent for a best of one event, with Repair and Recharge instead of Abuelos. And you probably don't need 4 lockdowns. You maybe could sideboard more than you even play, because they kind of help you cover if people still play Ghost Vacuum and things, in addition to their main deck cards in the post-board games. But that might mean you want to move away from Scroll Shift entirely. And kind of go back to what we used to see with, like, Moment of Truth, and then you just win by bouncing. It used to be Founding of the Third Path. I saw Canister at the PT, or at least his post-PT list, actually had a weird card from March of the Machine that was, like, an aura that gave a creature -X/-0, where X is the number of cards in your graveyard, and each player mills 2 cards, which means you would just mill both players down. So that would still work by bouncing it infinitely. But Repair and Recharge can target Planeswalkers, so if you wanted to just play one Jace to Perspective Mine, that would work too, and you just -4 it to mill them 12 cards and then keep bouncing it.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like it might be something people don't expect either. Like, if they don't prepare with any Graveyard Raid at all in their game one, they're just kind of screwed.
Yeah, and even the Dimir deck, which is kind of the normal nightmare matchup for Omniscience, they are a lot lower on counter magic and duress, and they're even completely cut Deep Cavern Bat because the format has changed so much to be more board presence related.
Mm-hmm. I would think best of one, people would play a lot of the maybe red ley line, mono red or gruel.
They banned you know, Heartfire Hero and Monstrous Rage, so those decks are a lot worse.
Yeah. Well, just as something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
For the format, maybe people will play that. I've been playing against the Gruul Delirium aggro deck. That deck's pretty good.
Yeah, that might be a good choice for best of one too. It's just pretty straightforward and fast.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I think like interacting with your opponent is going to be worse in best of one by a lot. So.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of best of three, I'm not mythic yet on the ladder. I think I'm like diamond.
Okay.
But so just so people have a reference of where I'm at and the sort of decks I'm going to tell you that I'm playing against. I mostly play against mono white, Dimir, lots of Unidecks, like Naya Una has been popularized by some content creators and whatnot. So I've seen a lot of this sort of same Una list. What else do I play against? And then the Gruul Aggro deck. I think those are... Oh, and then like black midrange. Usually,
well, is it
black.
Cauldron? Do you play against that much?
I haven't.
Okay.
I've played against it, I think, twice. So maybe that's more in the Mythic side, or maybe people aren't really playing it. I'm not sure.
A lot of Mythic wild cards, too. That might be a part of it, but yeah.
Yeah. It also... Maybe people don't want to play a Is It deck when their best card just got banned. I don't know. Although, obviously, that card the whole point of that deck is it sort of didn't even play it before.
But yeah, I'm looking at some of the decks you sent me. A couple of Unit decks, both Abzan and Naya.
So yeah, I like Una quite a lot. I started with Abzan because I liked the interaction between Esper Origins and Summon Primal Odin. And Odin is also just a pretty good card to get back with Una.
Yep.
I found out pretty quickly that I don't like putting the like 8 and 9 mana Saga creatures in my deck.
Makes
the
total sense.
Knights Round of Bahamut. I feel like you're better off just, like, some of the time, you'd even rather reanimate the 7-mana Overlord.
Yeah, of course. And, yeah, this Abzan deck you sent me kind of looks like you could easily win a game without drawing Una. And when you start
totally.
8 and 9 drops to your deck, that's going to become a lot harder.
Exactly, yeah. I originally had... This was more of a white-focused deck with Lockdown.
Yeah.
But the decks people were playing, just Lockdown wasn't very good against, so I switched it to a black focus. Liliana, it's not my favorite card, honestly, but I wanted something that I could discard cards from my hand, because it's pretty nice to be able to discard Esper Origins, which is one reason the red deck is popular. I think they have some red cards that discard it.
Gotcha,
But yeah, so I've been super impressed with Esper Origins, Una, Scavenger Regent. So one thing about this deck is you want to kind of keep your... permanent count high because of Esper Origins. The backside, you pretty much always want to draw cards. So Scavenger Regent fits nice there. And then that's just been a good card. I mean, it's a pretty decent sweeper. A lot of the time, just killing small creatures in this format is still good. And all your bigger guys will live through that.
Yep.
It's not a terrible card to just cast.
The Dimir deck has a lot of X1s. Also, yeah, 4/4 Flying Ward discard a card is not going to be terrible. I agree. It's going to be a 2-for-1.
Blocker.
When the format slows down, that makes sense. And yeah, it looks pretty nice. I see you have in both these unit decks the Overlord, the Green Overlords, and Leyline Bindings, which I don't think I always see in the unit decks.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I think what's going on is people are mostly built like... So I watched Gab Nassif had a video where he posted on Channel Fireball YouTube channel, whatever, where he did a Naya one, and he specifically said he was building the deck for post-rotation, which makes sense for content creators to do. So everybody's got... They're planning to not have binding, so they're just playing Summon Fenrir.
Okay.
But I think if you're playing in the format right now. Not in a month from now, it doesn't make much sense to have Summon Fenrir, because like people are playing things like whatever the Oblivion Ring card is. It's called something else, but...
They're playing Torch the Tower, too. Sorry, not... I don't mean in the unit decks, but I mean against your deck. I know you still get a land when they Torch the Tower or Summon Fenrir, but I've watched a lot of videos of people Torch the Towering Summon Fenrirs against this deck, and they would have not had targets otherwise.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a factor. Also, so the Overlord's better to get back with Yuna, obviously, than a Fenrir. I think the joke with Fenrir is it's easier because it goes to Graveyard on its own.
Yeah, and you're not in the Abzan list, you're not playing the Black Overlord. I guess turn two Black Overlord, finding Fenrir, and then playing Fenrir, I would assume, is maybe appealing to some people.
Yeah, I would love the Black Overlord.
You can't hit other avatars off the Black Overlord, which is a fundamental issue because both these Yuna decks really like the idea of playing lots of Overlords to hit them.
Right, exactly. But like, for example, what I was saying before, Gab's list had whatever the 3-mana Oblivion Ring variant is called in Standard.
Banshee, and I'm like, yeah.
I'm like, there's no way. I'm just going to play green Overlord. Because when you play the Overlord, I mean, Binding doesn't trigger Beanstalk anymore, but it's still a 1-mana instant.
Yeah, it's still very versatile. Being an instant matters a ton.
Yeah, and it's nice to mill it over to have just enchantments that are removal spells to get back with Yuna when you mill them over, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I definitely like playing Overlord for now. Obviously, you'll have to maybe consider switching to Fenrir once Binding's gone.
Yeah, also, even just without Binding, you know, it suspends into a 6-5, or is a 6-5 later in the game for 5 mana. That's pretty serious, you know.
Yeah. Summon Fenrir has been pretty good, too. I usually play like one.
Okay.
It does die to Torch Tower. It's probably one of its worst things. But, I mean, it one of the things it can block right away is kind of nice.
Yep. I see you have Elspeth in the sideboard of both of these decks. Just kind of filler. You like it a lot?
I like it. It's just a way to play against sweepers.
Makes sense. Elspeth stood out as a card to me that I thought maybe would be way better after these bans.
I think Mono White plays a lot of it, and Mono White's been doing pretty good, so.
Yeah, you know, so the Mono White deck I have a decent amount of respect for. I'm curious in spaces where you put Elspeth in your deck and not necessarily Carrot Cake, or not necessarily even Caretaker's Talent, you know, just what, you know, just like a green white Llanowar Elf beatdown deck that plays Elspeth sounded somewhat appealing to me, or just even a mid-range deck could use it. The Boros Monument deck, you know, could still be a thing, I guess, and they could sideboard it or play it main. It just seems like it reminds me a lot of Elspeth's Sun's Champion, which completely dominated Standard a long time ago.
Yeah, no, it's a really good card. It's not the best home in a main deck with Yuna, because you already have all these other expensive cards.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think you were going to main deck it in these decks, but it's just a card that I have my eye on for both post-rotation and right now for Qualifier Weekend that seems really powerful. And you have a deck we'll talk about at the end that also has Ugin, and that's a similar category. Those two Planeswalkers from that set seem like really a cut above a lot of other Planeswalkers they've printed recently, where they kind of protect themselves and have a lot of loyalty. And, you know, they protect themselves, like, with a plus. I mean, Ugin doesn't technically with a plus, but, you know, it has 9 loyalty, so it's not really going to die in combat.
And yeah, I totally agree. I can see brewing with that card, too. I usually have an Elspeth in the sideboard of all my white decks.
Yeah.
This is a pretty strong card. The last thing I'll say about this Abzan deck is the Resentful Revelations or something I'm trying. You want some kind of, like, fill your graveyard card.
Makes
and
sense.
Some people play the green Dredger's Insight. That might be better, but Revelation hits some of your sideboard cards, and flashing it back can happen.
Yeah, and also, I guess, like, sometimes you want to leave the permanents in your graveyard and hit something else. I guess sometimes it's the lands, but not always, right? Like,
yeah.
You want to hit, like you said, your sideboard cards, I guess, mostly to rest, things like that.
Yeah. The Outrageous Robbery I actually added because of the Mono White deck. It kind of single-handedly beats that matchup.
Okay, that makes sense.
To have one in your main deck. The sideboard games sometimes are a little different, but having one in your main deck to find, you can almost always beat them with it.
The game's going to take forever, yeah. And this list, I see, because you have Resentful Revelation and Esper Origins, you don't have to mill it.
Right, and you have so much ramp, and you just do it for 10 or 11 at some point, and you beat them.
Got it.
And then, I've also tried Naya. This is the more popular version, mostly because Torch the Tower is pretty good against, like, the blue-black deck and stuff.
Yeah.
This is just my list. I've got Overlord still, because I think that's good. But nothing too interesting there.
And you're doing the thing. Why only 3 Yuna in these decks?
You could maybe have 4. I've just liked 3. I don't know. It's legendary. People in the sideboard of games, people attack your graveyard all the time.
Okay.
So
but you could always fix that in the sideboard of games and still play 4 in your
Could. You could, yeah. I could see playing 4. If I was going to play 4, it'd more likely be in the Naya deck.
Yeah, that deck looks a little bit more streamlined. Like, it's really trying to find it.
Because it has Terra and Joshua, yeah. So you're going to more often. And maybe I should have 4 in that one. I'm not sure.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I'll say the other thing about the red lists in general is with the huge rise of Dimir midrange, which it's already kind of calmed down, and I'm seeing a lot more Cauldron on Magic Online and in blue-red decks, but Torch of Tower and Fire Magic, potentially even main deck Fire Magic, look really strong against Dimir.
Oh, yeah. This deck probably is pretty well under that. Some lists have Fear Missing Out instead of Dredger's Insight, but I really like having the card to be able to sack to torch to kill the cat.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a pretty nice deck. This deck, Mono White was a bit of an issue with it. Some of the control decks were beating me a decent amount. So, okay. You know, it's a bit of a smaller midrange deck. Doesn't have quite as much play in the late game.
Yeah, Summon Primal Odin seems really threatening. Things like that you're missing out on.
Yeah, you get duresses and stuff. For yeah, your sideboard. Makes sense. That's a pretty big deal.
Cool.
The other, I've sort of been working at control decks. Jeskai Control seems pretty decently positioned. I like Scorching Dragonfire.
That makes sense. That's kind of the Torch of Tower you have to play because you can't bargain.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd rather play Torch of Tower, but there's no bargain. Yeah. So it is what it is. I've liked Joshua in this deck.
You like it?
Yeah.
Oh.
This deck already has a lot of creatures, and it doesn't die to the small creature removal. So the big creature removal is kind of taxed on your dragons and your Bezas.
That makes sense.
It's just been a pretty good card. You can you can get it back with Shiko. It's not the best to get back, but you can. Can discard things to set up.
Two mana counter spells and no three steps ahead. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. Especially since this is like a stock up deck and a Joshua and Temporary Lockdown, you're kind of all in on tapping out on turn three.
So your instants are pretty much all two mana, which just makes sense to me. Like that's a much more reasonable thing to leave up on earlier turns. You can double spell with them on turn four or on turn five. You can play a stock up and still leave up a counter spell. It's just a big deal.
Yeah, totally. And the late game, even against other late game decks, you're not really trying to beat them with counter spells because they've got like a lot of them have Cavern of Souls and things like
and
that.
And I see you have some tech one ofs like Jace and Jeskai Revelation for the more late game decks too.
Yeah, Jace is mostly like you kind of have to play it to beat Mono White. It's weird. Yeah. It's like without it, the matchup's hard, but if you have one, the matchup's pretty easy. So
yeah, you know, I used to play a lot of Omniscience on ladder, and I'd play against the Jeskai control deck, and I felt like if I saw your deck list as it is now without a Chase, that matchup would be really easy to win game one almost every time with Omniscience. Like an insanely high game one win percentage, I think, if you navigated correctly. Yeah. But it involves getting the spots where you get very low on library count and you cast a lot. It's a lot harder to beat two Jaces than one Jace, I guess. Two Jaces is where it was like, they're just going to start aggressively digging for two Jaces while you try to aggressively kind of sculpt for your combo and they can just mill you 30 cards on turn eight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see formats where you play two Jaces, but I don't really like the card. So yeah.
No, I agree. It's not a very strong card, but I understand what you're talking about. And definitely like playing more than two Jaces seems kind of crazy to me because I do think in these types of matchups, it's actually not that hard to find both of them by turn eight and win on turn eight in these types of matchups.
Yeah. Stock up does a huge work.
Yeah. And she'd go for stock up. Yeah.
Yeah. You could see your whole deck with something like this. So this deck's been, you know, this deck's not very exciting, but I think out of the most established control decks, it's probably this one. And then the other control deck I've been working on is a pet deck of mine that I was working on a lot last format.
Yeah.
And it's changed a decent amount. Like, I've added Blot Outs. Okay. And, like, a three steps ahead. Because Blot Out is pretty nice against blue-black. But, yeah, I've been really impressed with this deck. So, I've talked about Candy Trail before. It's, like, a surprisingly good card in control decks. It's reminiscent of Serum Visions, but the life gain is actually quite relevant. Especially for a blue-black deck. And then Ugin is a super strong card.
Yeah.
As you mentioned before. And just having this sort of small art, I mean, it's not that small. I've got quite a few artifacts, but just having this artifact package lets you beat a lot of things that a blue-black deck couldn't normally beat. Like, you can play Ugin and then cast two cheap artifacts right after it to get against, like, a deck like Mono White, for instance, where you normally can't remove enchantments.
Exactly. That's exactly
it. It's just a super good card against them. Yeah. And then Ring River Regent and Scavenger Regent, I've liked those cards. They're very good. They make Dispelling Exile pretty good. I used to have Caustic Exile in the main when Mono Red was a thing. It was one of the best cards. Now I have it in the sideboard, so I can have Anoint with Affliction, but...
Cool. Yeah. That's pretty... Sorry. That was...
No, it's cool. Yeah. I would actually say, like, if I had to play in a standard tournament, I would definitely play this deck out of all the standard decks I've played. It's quite
interesting.
Good.
I mean, I want to explore, like I said, with Elspeth and Ugin, I just think these are cards that were kind of forced out of the format with how aggressive it is. And, you know, right. Even the decks I'm seeing that are kind of top dogs, I think, are not the same. Also, you know, Ugin, like, works against Tidebinder even from Dimir, because if you have an artifact in your hand and you play it, you like try to exile their Kaido or Enduring Curiosity. If they Tidebinder the trigger and you can just zero it and play an artifact, you still get what you wanted.
Yeah, it's a super nice card. It's almost always going to do something really good.
Yeah,
and then, you know, it's the kind of card that sometimes opponents can beat planeswalkers that are sitting in play if they were really far ahead, often with like burn or things like that. But the fact that you plus two to draw a card and gain three life really shuts the game down really quick. Oh, and then, of course, yeah, anytime you draw a colorless thing, you just,
if you play Tarkir Limited, you know this about this card, that like you can be insanely behind on board and cast this card even without an artifact in your hand or artifacts in your deck, referencing Tarkir Dragonstorm Limited, and
yep,
and you just play it and exile their best thing and it goes to 9 loyalty and you gain 3 life and draw a card and they can't kill you and they can't kill it.
Yep.
It's just completely absurd. Like,
yeah, it's an excellent card.
Yeah.
And then the nice thing about blue black also is you don't have to play Jace because you have Restless Reef. So that's your like mill win condition that beats mono white. You don't have to worry about them killing all your threats and decking you. You can beat them with that.
The last time there was a standard qualifier weekend, I actually played a blue black control deck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when Gruul was probably what I should have played. And actually, what's kind of funny is you could switch decks between day one and day two. And I made day two with blue black. And I kind of kept telling myself, I should really not play this on day two. And I played it on day two anyways in my O2. but it was a at the time, it was kind of rising in popularity. It had Oil Deep Gear Hulks, which was kind of weird. It's kind of an anti-aggro card.
That's a pretty good card.
It had like the Jace plus Doomsday Excruciator combo, but not like four copies of either. Like, I think I played two and two and the rest of Griefs. It's kind of all over the place. Dimir mid-rangey deck. This was pre-Tarkir Dragonstorm after Aether Drift, though. So that's stock up and Gear Hulk. But
yeah, I like the Gear Hulk. I decided the colorless lands were too important to play it. But
yeah, you know, I've played a lot of control-y matchups where Fountain Port has kind of soloed me, so I have a lot of respect for that card.
Yeah. I'm pretty uncertain about the mix I should have. I didn't have Blast Zone before.
Yeah.
Or no, I did. I can't remember.
That was certainly the weirdest of the lands you have, just because I kind of hate sacking my lands as a control deck.
Yeah. It's, what does it do for you? It kills some annoying permanents. Kills, like, Cauldron. It was really good against,
This deck still kind of struggles with artifacts deck, because Ugin doesn't really answer colorless artifacts.
Exactly.
Okay.
The artifact deck. And, you know, you have a lot of mana in this deck and games that go long, so you can use it in other spots, too.
Yeah. I mean, I know I lost to Blue-White Control at Pro Tour Aether Drift, and they had two main deck Blast Zones. I've seen it. And I lost to their Blast Zones, too. So.
Yeah. If people are still playing, like, Izzet decks with Storm Chaser's Talent, it's pretty nice to be able to clean those up.
That makes sense. Yeah, they are, and that's a deck that, you know, so as far as what we've talked about, we haven't really talked about blue-red decks, and I see both Cauldron, but also just blue-red kind of mid-rangey VV decks still kind of doing well.
Yeah, I played against those decks. Let's see. I'm not sure what they do now. When I played against them, they had, like, Steaming Sauna, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know,
they look kind of bad against your control decks. I mean, maybe not the Cauldron deck. The Cauldron deck is really fast. I like that part.
Yeah, I haven't played much against the Cauldron deck.
All the time. Like, it's, and not in like any weird ways. You know, they just like play a FOMO and discard a VV, and then they play a Cauldron and they make a bunch of mana and they just win because they've had a giant mana rock effectively and play some haste creatures and profs Eidetic Memory, and they have their Winter Night Stories to grind still.
Yeah. I'm not sure what this format's actually going to look like once people start focusing in on it more after rotation, and obviously a new set is going to come out. But against what I've been playing, I mean, this blue-black deck has been excellent, so definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And the Ugin thing doesn't have to go in a blue-black control deck. You could definitely, I could see playing like Candy Trail and the couple of ramp cards and Ugins in other styles of decks, like maybe blue-white or something else entirely.
Yeah, I think... it's just a package that could go into a lot of decks. I mean, I guess you want the game to go longer, of course, but it definitely not reliant on any specific colors. So
no, yeah. And then I mean, the new set's going to have a lot of colorless cards, maybe? I don't even know.
Yeah, maybe. A lot of artifacts, maybe not colorless cards, but it probably will. And then, you know, things like... They keep pushing, I guess, they're kind of reevaluating their mana ramp things. So, you know, for all we know, maybe there's like a Mind Stone or something that really pushes it over the edge.
Yeah, that would be cool. The one Ironcrag is actually pretty good in the deck, but you can only really play one.
Yeah, I imagine. Mind Stone came to mind as like the perfect card.
Oh, I would love Mind Stone in this deck. Probably four.
Yeah, it would be better. Like, I know you have Hedron Archive, which cleanly curves into Ugin, but the fact that you can cast Mind Stone, just play it and sack it through an Ugin or whatever, it has to be the perfect card for this deck if you could pick
a
card.
Yeah, I would totally. For sure. Hedron Archive's okay. I don't know. Sometimes I think maybe even just Solemn Summer Acrim would be better, but this card's pretty bad against Torture Tower, so I don't know. Got Archive for now. Yeah, so that's what I've been playing. Standard's been fun.
Yeah, I'm going to play it some this week. I'll probably start with blue-red decks, but I might give these decks a try. I probably have a lot of these decks. I've built a blue-black control deck. I think I drafted enough Dragonstorm to probably have a full set, so.
Yeah, right on. I'm still, you know, the format just changed, so the numbers aren't set. Feel free to move stuff around.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this episode, folks. Thanks for listening.
To be clear, my hope for next week's episode is that I'm going to have a deck that I would genuinely recommend and kind of a detailed reason as to why for Standard for the qualifier weekend.
Okay, right on. Yeah, I'm going to keep playing Standard, so I'll narrow in my focus a little bit too.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll see how that goes for next weekend. We might be, whenever there's kind of an off schedule, we might be doing episodes like this where we just sort of chat about what we've been playing. That's I think this went pretty well, so.
Yep.
Thanks for listening or watching, and we'll see you next time. Okay, so real quick, I know we talked about the Arena Direct already, but that's sort of what I want to talk about on the sign-off. Specifically, how they've been, they've changed them, and they're making them more aggressively costed, basically. I think they're testing the waters, like they reduced the amount of losses you could get. They did that a while ago, and I think that's going to stay. And for the universe beyond this Final Fantasy set, which they're probably going to do for all the universe beyond ones, is they raise the gems up to 8,000, which is basically $40. And
yeah, so you put $100 in, and you can only play two of them if you do poorly in them or good. But
exactly, yeah. And you know, people can play, spend their money however they want, but I just want people to be aware of like how difficult it is to win the big prize. Because of things like the variance is so high. Like I won with some pretty poor decks and then lost with some good ones. So it's almost like, you know, it's kind of a numbers game where, so I was watching, there was two other big streamers that I follow on YouTube that were posting about it, which was Numot the Nummy.
Cool.
And Paul Cheon.
Yep. Big fans of them. I used to watch their streams a long time ago and a lot. They're two of the biggest streamers.
Yeah, and Numont has been streaming ever since, and it's funny, Paul just recently got back into it.
Yep.
And so Paul's videos, when you watch his, the way he did his videos was he just showed the ones that he won. But he did say that, like, hey, this is really hard. I think he said he's been winning about a prize like 1 in 5 or something.
Yeah.
And which funny enough, I got 10 boxes this weekend and I did about 22 runs.
Okay, wow.
So that's like, it was like a 1 in 5 also for me. And then Numot, he was posting videos and he would do combined videos and he would edit them, but it was just like every run he did.
Cool.
And he opened like these really absurd pools in his first couple of videos and he got like two wins. Like he opened a double Buster Sword pool and a double Esper Origins pool. And he didn't get any gems at all with either of those.
Yeah, I feel that. My weekend was really funny with Olivia. On Friday and Saturday, we won 6 boxes and other runs we had were almost all 4 or 5 wins. So we basically won 6 boxes with $100. But then we pushed our luck and on Sunday we put in like another $200 only to win one more box.
Gotcha. Like, yep. And so for people who
all day except at the end, but yeah.
Like when I do these, I kind of take it as I just have to, like, the numbers are worth it, and I have a high enough win rate, which I don't know what that even needs to be. Maybe not even that high. Well, it needs to be really high, but what I mean is, like, maybe you can spike no matter, I don't know. But, you know, even for me, I'm going in, I'm thinking, like, all right, I'm going to spend quite a bit of money. Like, I wrote it all down. I bought the $100 bundle 7 times.
Okay.
So that's 700 plus, and my tax for each one was like $8, right? So it's like 750 or whatever. And then I won the 10 boxes, and assuming I'm going to sell them, and assuming, like, fees and everything, I was saying each box is worth conservatively about 160, or I assumed they went down. I'm assuming they're going to go down a little bit.
Yeah. And they're then, like 220 when I checked on Friday, but I'm sure they're already less than that and they're probably going to go lower.
Yeah. Once the Arena Direct stuff comes out. So I was assuming, like, okay, maybe I get them, they're 200, I sell them, they're 160 a box. So that leaves me with like a profit of like $860, what I've written down, which is pretty good. But I played all weekend, and the point is like, if you're going to play these, and you're just going to do one or two or three tries, it probably is not worth it. Like, you're probably going to lose a really high percentage of the time, and it's a lot of money. People can do whatever they want.
Yeah, money's different to different people, of course. So, but you know, just definitely keep in mind that everybody always has a lot of bad runs. And yeah, I had some insane decks. I also had some decks where it was like, they looked like draft decks where they didn't have like a lot of bombs, but I was like, wow, I have like a really cohesive, kind of nice, like, I had like a white black aggro deck splashing the Esper rare, and like the Esper rare was actually like kind of a bomb in my deck.
Okay.
And it was just like, lose the die roll mulligan, like die, like just go 1-2. And like, it was like the thing you were talking about where it's like, I really wish I just got to play this deck. Like, I wasn't expecting to really win the boxes, but I was expecting to like get some gems back, you know, like.
Yeah. And depending how your losses come, you might not even get any gems. Like, obviously I wrote down all the times I got gems and added that into my calculations, but yeah, they can be rough. They can be brutal on the mind too. You're like, man.
No, I agree. On Sunday, I was kind of losing my mind. The last run we did, I started 6-0 and lost the last two, so that was also kind of upsetting. But the deck, at least, was really fun, and I got the max amount of games and one box out of it. It had Fire Magic, Xenos, Nibelheim of Flame, so I had a bunch of sweepers.
Yeah.
And so this is a red-black-based deck, and I had, like, 4 towns and 2 world maps, and I played Magic Pot, Undercity Diorat, and Namazu Trader. So it's pretty much all black red, but I splashed Ultimisia, Fate of the Sun Crist for removal, Krom, the 5 mana 4/4 flying haste that taxes your opponent not to cast a second spell.
But then, I opened that once.
The real kicker of this deck is I had Summon Knights of the Round in it with 1 plains and 2 white towns, but 2 maps and like the 3 treasure making things. And this was just like a Rakdos control deck that I pretty much won every game with Summon Knights of the Round eventually. And
nice.
It was very fun. Like, it was very cohesive. Just played the late game. It was awesome.
Yeah. I played one of the most, I was going to pull my hair out, the most frustrating thing that happened to me is I played against this. I had this really good Sultai control deck with lots of expensive bombs. Like lots of the Land Cyclers, and I think I had Arden and like Fight On and just lots of good rares, and it was a great deck. But I played against a deck that was like Mardu with like 9 or 10 of the really good removal spells, and they just killed like everything I had through my Fight On and everything.
Yeah.
But I was gonna deck them because they were just like drawing cards and removal. They didn't actually have that many things to kill me with, and I was at like 12 life or something, and they go down to 1 card in library. And their very last card in the library, and you know, in hindsight, they actually played, they knew what it was, and I could tell afterwards. But they go down to 1 card in library, and it's their second Choco Comet.
Choco Comet?
Yeah. Second of the game, and they just deal like 12 to me, and I was like, oh my god.
This control deck also had Summon GF Cerberus and Choco Comet. This is kind of nice finishing ability.
Oh, Choco Comet's insane. Yeah. This format. It's interesting. I've learned a lot about this format, and there's like not much for me to do with this information. I guess I could try to find a limited RCQ, but
sometimes they do these flashback Arena Directs. They probably won't do it for collector boosters, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's another Final Fantasy Play Booster Arena Direct at some point in the next year, even in the middle of another set. They did that with LCI.
Yeah. And it is the case, I bet going forward, the collector booster director would be a lot more valuable than the regular one. So that changed the numbers a little bit for people. But yeah.
Cool.
All right. That'll do it.
See you next week.